Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
I'm Ann Northrup. Happy Pride.
Yes. I mean, this weekend, it's the 50th anniversary of the first Christopher Street Liberation Day March in New York, Chicago, L.A., San Francisco. And it's going to be marked Sunday, in New York at least, by the Queer Liberation March for Black Lives and Against Police Brutality. And it's going to be through online celebrations around the world.
Just lost the headlines. Wait a minute. Here I go back to them. Transgender employment rights and LGB employment rights were affirmed by the U.S. Supreme Court last week, as you know. But violence against transgender people, particularly trans women of color, is continuing unabated. We have several sad stories of that this week. But our guest live is Kiara St. James, co-founder of the New York Transgender Advocacy Group, and she's here to tell us what transgender people are fighting for and what they're going through these days.
LGBT groups went to court this week to try to block Trump's order to end health care protections for transgender people. We'll talk to Kiara about that.
And in politics, two New York gay men, one black, the other Afro-Latino, are on track to make history in Congress, and they may be joined by a new lesbian member, too, but she's got a bigger hill to climb.
Republican Congressmember Matt Gaetz says that the attractive young man that he loves is not his lover.
Andy's favorite story. There are big steps forward this week for same-sex parents in the United States, in Israel, and in Cuba.
And an African nation is moving to decriminalize homosexuality.
Out gay Hollywood director of a couple of Batman movies and a lot of other big movies, Joel Schumacher, has died at age 80.
And we got a lot of cultural offerings to tell you about. There's so much happening. The end of Pride Month. Among the many on TV for LGBT Pride Week are the Broadway revival of William Finn's Falsettos online, and David France's new documentary, Welcome to Chechnya, on HBO, about the brutalization of people there. But we welcome Kiara St. James, who was the co-founder in 2014 and the executive director of the New York Transgender Advocacy Group and a community organizer for 20 years. Welcome.
Welcome, Kiara. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Andy and Anne. It's a pleasure to be here.
So we want to catch up with you about all the your reaction to all the news that's been taking place over the last couple of weeks. Let's start with some of the good news, the Supreme Court decision, which in the case of Amy Stevens, affirmed transgender rights as covered under sex discrimination under the Civil Rights Act of 1964. How did that make you feel, and what difference do you think this is going to make?
So I'm was overjoyed hearing that, right? But also, as a black trans woman, understanding the fact that for many black trans women throughout this nation, they don't have those opportunities to be employed in the first place. So oftentimes, those are some of the things that nationally cis queer folks can celebrate that black trans women and cannot, you know. As much as I was excited to hear the news, I know there's still a lot of work that has to get done in regards to employment opportunities for black trans women.
Every time we've spoken at a demonstration, and it's usually about some black trans woman who's been brutalized, that all politicians turn out, that is what you talk to me about as a reporter and say, get this in there. So what progress are we making on that, on getting employment programs and getting these things going? What are these politicians doing about that?
So they're not doing much, you know, and like oftentimes people are doing wordplay. And now even more so because of all of these national uprisings and people discovering Juneteenth, you know, there's sort of wordplay, right? And you know, we have a mayor who's saying like, oh, we're going to have Black Lives Matter murals in every borough. Aren't you excited?
Whoopee.
Whoopee. But Black trans women are still unemployed and homeless and dealing with lack of mental health services. And I think about that. And that has always been my journey as a Black trans woman, is that I cannot necessarily celebrate when other LGBT folks are able to celebrate, you know, and that just speaks to the nuances of what our challenges are and what our privileges are in this community.
It seems to me that we are marching for these issues, and we're marching against the police killings of people and the random killings of Black trans women in general. But economic justice is just not on the table these days. And I'm wondering whether, in a sort of global way, as the spotlight turns a little more in this direction, whether you see any change in the, let's say, general population in attitudes. Is there any more understanding or respect or acceptance of Black trans women?
No, I don't think so. And we've been here before. This isn't the first time that we've yelled Black Lives Matter. This isn't the first time that we said not one more. I am hopeful, but until I see true systemic changes, I think it's just going to be business as usual.
Can you tell us what specifically needs to happen and how people can affect their communities and the situation?
Yeah, well, you know, yesterday I was invited to speak at the Defund the Police rally, and that is a very critical fight that we all should be a part of. Defunding the police doesn't mean eradicating the police, but there's no acceptable reason in the world that the law enforcement of New York City should have a budget of $6 billion to militarize their police force, to also terrorize our children as they go to school. Like, just about every school system has armed police officers. So what that does is program Black and brown children to believe that they are the problem, and that's why they need police at the school. And that is community money. That $6 billion, a lot of that is community money. Black folks pay taxes, Latinx folks pay taxes, I pay taxes, and yet that money, our taxes, is going into arming a police force to target my Black body.
And you're also talking about a system that starts stigmatizing and terrorizing children at a very early age, whether it is with that system in school or what we call the walking while trans arrests and harassment by police on the streets. Young people are put in a defensive and terrified position from the very beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I remember it was quite a few years, but maybe 2010, I remember seeing this white woman. She had her son with her. And when you walk through Penn Station, there's the armed military, National Guards or whatever.
Yes.
So she wanted to take a picture of her son with the guy with the rifle. I'm like, this is not like, you should not be normalizing that type of relationship, you know? And so we have slowly normalize the presence of armed militia in our city. You know, not talking about armed militia, I mean like the military. I'm talking about the police force, you know, and that is a big problem. And that is why it's essential, like as a Black trans woman, I know that my life can be taken and nobody except the few in my community will shed a tear for me. And that's the fear. I have a little bit more privilege than a lot of my Black trans sisters. So if I have that fear, that trepidation, that every time I leave my house, my life is at risk, imagine how my other sisters who don't have the access to resources and elected officials that I do, how they feel. You know, and so this is a constant concern to me, is we have to fight. When we talk about we only have limited resources. No, we have, the resources are there. It's just that elected officials, and many of them here in New York City, being progressive as they may want you to believe, they are still part of the problem of not giving resources to the most marginalized community. You know, one of my amazing national sisters, Tori Cooper, said at USCA about 2 years ago, equity means those who need the most should get the most. You know, and so what we see happening is the folks who need the most, we still are at the bottom. You know, and people are aware, like, oh, all they need is investment, but people don't want to invest because let's be honest, people feel that black trans women are disposable, and like, oh, we don't want to give them too much money because they're not going to know how to spend their budget. All those things are in play. There's a lot of gatekeeping to resources that should be going directly to the black trans organizations. There's no reason in the world where some major nonprofit organizations in New York City are going after funding that is trans specific, especially when they are not founded by trans folks, especially when the only trans folks they really have are outreach workers, you know. And so it just speaks to, these are folks who, you see them, they're like, oh yeah, we stand with the trans community, but they don't support trans-led organizations who are really boots on the ground of this work.
Well, you know? Kiara St. James, last time I looked at your Facebook page, you had a quote from James Baldwin, to be black and conscious in America is to be in a constant state of rage.
Yes.
Then again, what I wonder how you react to those massive demonstrations that said trans lives matter that took place in Brooklyn and around the country a couple of weeks, just about a week and a half ago.
L.A., Boston, Chicago, Salt Lake City.
How did that hit you?
I mean, so I think it's wonderful. You know, it was a beautiful performative visual, right? Black trans lives matter. But once again, there are so many homeless black trans women in New York City, across the nation, that don't feel the impact of change. Like chanting Black Lives Matter, Black Trans Lives Matter, thank you. But where's your investment in black trans lives? And so, like, I'm not really impressed when I see those type of performative show of support when there's no monetary support to go along with it. Because let's be honest, movements, the type of work that I do, the type of work that a lot of trans-led organizations across this nation do, it entails money. It entails funding. It entails us to make sure that we have resources not only to take care of our community, but to pay our staff. And so I'm not really moved by those type of performative display of, you know, solidarity.
Redistribution of wealth would be a nice goal.
I like that. Sure.
And at least there's more and more talking about that. You are also open about the fact that you're living with HIV and we're all confronting the COVID virus. What special issues in this pandemic are there for transgender women, especially transgender women of color?
So this time is, like, especially for folks who have comorbidities, HIV, you know, other, that is, and a lot of black trans women are HIV positive, simply not because they're black, are we trans, but because of how the system was created to force us into underground sex work and you know, that is a real issue. And so COVID-19 has really impacted the black trans community in how shelters are able to deny trans women housing. Not so much here in New York City, but like across the nation, it is now legal. It is legal to deny shelter to trans women. And that is of great concern to me because I do a lot of work, not just here in New York City, but across the nation as well as globally. And so COVID-19 has really, it's a godsend in a way because it has really exposed the fact that there are all these disparities that have always existed. And because now you're not distracted by baseball and football and you have no choice but to hear black folks say Black Lives Matter. Now, you know, this is an opportunity to really start addressing that. Address, you know, one of my amazing national sisters, Kayla Gore, who lives in Memphis. She's executive director of Sister. I forget the name of her organization. She's going to kill me. But she's doing a lot of amazing work in Memphis. They just raised, I believe, $150,000 for the Black trans community in Memphis, you know, to as they deal with COVID-19. And so what we're seeing with COVID-19 once again is Black trans women are having to fall back on one another for resources and to support one another.
Well, we're not allowed to do fundraising on the show, but we always tell people if you want to learn more about the New York Transgender Advocacy Group, you can go to their website, which is NYTAG.org, and they can learn more about you. Can we get, you want to, Ann, go ahead.
Well, I want to raise what is certainly the most awful and poignant issue for us week after week, which is the murders of Black trans women. Whether it is Lailene Polanco in Rikers Island jail by her jailers or women just episodically around the country. We try to honor all those lives by remembering those women unfortunately, every week, because that's how often the stories come along. And I wonder if you have any thoughts about this epidemic of murders of Black trans women and how there might be any way to interfere with that horrible chain of violence.
And maybe just start with one of them that happened this week. Maybe we should talk about just beforehand, Selena Reyes Hernandez, 37 years old, if you put her picture up. She was murdered by an 18-year-old that she took home, Orlando Perez. And once he learned she was trans, he said he needed to leave. Then he returned 20 minutes later and shot her dead. And then he came back a second time and shot her multiple more times, the 16th victim of an anti-trans murder this year. And he can't use the trans panic defense in Illinois.
Absolutely. Yeah, I hate to say that we just lost another young lady in Atlanta, a Black trans woman who was killed yesterday. And let me see, I can pull up her name if... And so, yeah, so this is systemic. This is social, you know, like, so I'm going to say this because I lead with Blackness because I'm Black first. Before I knew I was anything else, I knew I was Black, right? I happen to be a Black woman of trans experience. I feel that a lot of times, you know, like when I was walking to the rally to speak yesterday, a young Latinx man told me and a brother I was walking with, "How about you stop killing one another?" Right? So once again, I'm going to say that all of this is tied into how Black communities are policed. All this is tied into culture of scarcity. And one of the reasons why I'm very, very adamant about we all need to demand the funding of the New York Police Department, not just only in New York, but nationally, so money can go into creating safe housing for Black trans women. You know, oftentimes, especially in the South, there's a lot of discrimination. It's a Southern belt. I'm from Texas, and I know that it's very different. And so I really want folks to understand that there's a correlation between culture of scarcity, that is intentional, school to prison pipelines, the fact that Black trans women lead the nation in homicides, HIV transmissions, all that is there's correlations. And the number one correlation is that we are deemed disposable and that we are not worthy of investment, right? And but like one of the things that I do here in New York City and also nationally is I work with Black communities, right? I live in the hood. I love the hood. The hood is good. It's been good to me. And I think, you know, so I'm having those conversations, but that's also about funding, right? So I have to get funded so I can have the conversations and I can bring other folks to talk, have these conversations with Black folks in Black spaces. Oftentimes when we do this type of work, you know, we're kind of preaching to the choir. It's always like at the center, you know, somewhere on the pier, Trans Day of Action. You know, a lot of this work that Black trans women in leadership roles like me have to do is in the Black community itself. And so this is something that is going to be ongoing unless there is more opportunities for us to have engaging conversations with a lot of the Black folks in the community, and understanding that I don't want to put people on blast, but like there's a lot of misogyny, and a lot of that misogyny is created because of the fear of Black men, or the effeminization of Black men. Let me put it that way. And oftentimes it's led by cis Black mothers of Black sons and saying, you better not find out that you're gay. I better not find. So that is indoctrinated into, it was indoctrinated into me, indoctrinated into a lot of assigned Black males as children. So growing up, Black men can have attraction to trans women of variety ethnicities, right? But in the back of their head, they're also thinking about the fact that this is wrong. I was told that is something wrong about me to be attracted to a woman, to a trans woman. And so oftentimes what we find is when trans women are murdered, it's somebody they know. Somebody, the young lady that, who was killed in Atlanta recently, she knew the person, right? She knew. And like, so with a lot of Black men, cis Black men, it's that fear of, I got to take your life before you go telling people my business, right? And so it starts with doing that work in the Black community, addressing transphobia, addressing homophobia, and it's going to take a good while to really see impact in the Black community when it comes to addressing transphobia. But I think it's a worthy fight.
Well said. Thank you, Kiara. I think our audience is going to be extremely impressed and moved by what you've had to say. And as Andy said, I urge everybody to go to nytag.org, NYTAG.org, to get more information and find out how they can be helpful in general in the communities.
And Kiara, I hope you'll keep us posted on your campaigns. And, you know, we're making some movement around police and some movement around economic justice. But when you crystallize what it is you want us all to get behind, let's have you on again and talk about it. And let's get something done.
It's coming soon. Trans March on DC is in October. So definitely want to come back and talk about that.
Okay. Great. Consider yourself booked.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll see you soon, and good luck with everything. Thank you, Kiara.
Wow.
Very powerful.
Indeed.
All right. Yeah, thanks a ton to Kiara for sharing all of that with us. And we can all get in this fight, and we don't need to wait until someone tells us what to do. There's plenty of direction out there and plenty of ways we can get involved, so please do.
And we should finish up on some other transgender news notes. This week, T.D. Gulley, 31 years old, who was killed last year in Portland, Oregon, was a Black trans woman and has now been added to the list of those who may have been lynched. And the medical examiner at the time had ruled her death a suicide.
Right. And we mentioned Selena in Chicago. What else am I looking for? Thankfully, another death, but the Trump administration, Trump himself and his Department of Justice are now fighting in court for the Idaho law that forbids trans athletes from participating in sports with trans women athletes with cis women athletes. They're just relentless in their desire to attack trans people and particularly trans women at every turn.
And LGBT groups, legal groups, are suing Trump over the rollback of health protections for transgender people and others. And then, you know, with all the excitement about the Supreme Court decision, Democrats in the Senate tried to get unanimous consent for the Equality Act. You could argue a little naive, but Senator James Lankford, right-wing Republican, gets up there and starts quoting from J.K. Rowling to oppose that move. and cited her plea for empathy for women who want their concerns heard without threats or abuse. How about the threats and abuse to trans people all across this country?
Exactly.
All right.
Let's go to
politics.
Yeah, let's go to the election results. Well, we were a little gobsmacked, as they say, here in New York State. There are, what, half a dozen states that held primaries yesterday. We're, of course, coming to you live on Wednesday and subsequent days on tape. So the primaries were last night. Not all of them have final results because so many people are voting by mail. And screwing up the elections, as Trump would say. But we were very scared in New York that we were going to elect a very right-wing, homophobic, anti-choice Democrat to the United States Congress from the Bronx.
Reverend Ruben Diaz, and Senior, who is a classic homophobe. And the winner apparently is going to be, although, again, they still have to count, but he's right now is leading 2-1. Richie Torres, 32 years old, a gay Afro-Latino,
currently on the city council in New York.
A gay activist, and it was quite a breakthrough. He did get the New York Times endorsement. People seemed to coalesce around him as, beyond the fact of his own merits, as the way to stop Ruben Diaz, and that seems to have happened.
Yeah, originally there were, 900 people in the primary.
There were 12 candidates. One of them was the former Speaker of the City Council, Melissa Mark Viverita. She got a couple hundred votes. I mean, it went nowhere.
We really thought that field was going to split all the anti-Diaz votes and that Diaz would walk away with it. But
I was wrong.
Well, I think we all saw this movement in the last week or two of people just biting the bullet and saying, we have to get behind one candidate to beat Diaz, and Richie Torres ended up being that candidate.
And just north of New York City, you got the 17th Congressional District, which is another open seat where Nita Lowey is leaving. And the Democratic primary, Mondaire Jones, an out gay black guy, won, very progressive, endorsed by the whole, Bernie Sanders AOC outfit. And, it's quite a breakthrough. This is going to be quite a different House of Representatives.
It's an empty seat, Democratic tending, and so he's considered pretty much a lock to be elected.
And then upstate, a narrowly Republican district, the Democrat nominee for the second time is going to be Tracy Mitrano, an out lesbian, trying to unseat the Republican Tom Reed, Allegheny County, Ithaca, Southern Tier of New York. Good luck to her.
Well, sometimes they do win the second time around.
They do.
And there's a whole new atmosphere out there these days, and people are really out to punish the Republicans, which couldn't make me happier.
Okay. Some other news from around the state.
Well, I had a little more political news in Georgia. The legislature has passed an enhanced penalties for hate crimes law, adding sexual orientation to the hate crimes law. I'm not quite sure whether gender identity fits into this. Gender is included. So if we go by the Supreme Court decision, that may be defined as including gender identity. We're a little nervous about enhanced penalties for hate crimes as a punishment. But it's nice to be included. And the governor, Brian Kemp, who is a right-wing Republican, has said he will sign the law. Now, maybe that's the sign that it's not a good law, but
it never cease. Ohio doesn't have a statewide LGBT rights law, but the State Court of Appeals ruled that under the Supreme Court ruling, Ohio law now bans discrimination based on, this was a sexual orientation case. Now, in the substance of the case, they didn't rule for the plaintiff. They said, well, you didn't prove your case, but you are covered under sexual orientation.
Well, presumably we will see a lot more of this. Now that this standard has been established, it will be expanded. But until that happens, or as that is being worked out, the Trump administration and governments around the country are trying very hard to keep in place homophobic laws and exclusions of our LGBT population from any anti-discrimination law that doesn't specifically apply to employment. So housing laws, public accommodation laws, anything else where you're looking for non-discrimination, we have not achieved non-discrimination yet because the Supreme Court decision has not been applied that widely. We still have to fight all those battles, and they're fighting back. They do not want that right expanded.
There was a big profile of Joe Biden's evolution on LGBT issues in the New York Times. If you watch the show, you don't need to hear about it. But I did learn that he has an LGBTQ grandchild, which I didn't know. And he is officiated at 2 gay weddings.
Yeah, I'd like to see the grandchild. Well, meanwhile, today, Wednesday, the president is welcoming the president of Poland to the White House. The president of Poland is facing a re-election vote in 4 days, and he, of course, has based his whole campaign on being anti-gay.
Very encouraging to hear Jewish leaders in Poland speaking out against that and saying, you are dehumanizing people. These are Jewish leaders saying, this is what happened to us in the Holocaust. Don't do it.
Well, I don't know that they're going to have a great impact, but it's nice to hear them say that. It is disgusting to see Trump welcome this guy to the White House. He's so clearly...
That's why he invited him.
He's only interested in these dictators. Well, and Pompeo, here's something to look forward to. Secretary of State Pompeo put together a commission to examine the United States' position on human rights around the world. But all the members of the commission are right-wing religious nuts, and their report is going to come out very shortly, and it's going to say, even the New York Times says this, that religious freedom should be the overwhelming priority over actual human rights of people like LGBT people, and it's going to be a disaster.
Well, so there are a bunch of groups, human rights groups, hundreds, I think 100 of them, that are suing to stop the work of the commission as inappropriate and wrong legally. Speaking of appointments and religious freedom, Fred Davey, an out gay, we have a picture of him there with his husband and other gay leaders. He's married to the executive director of SAGE, Michael Adams. That's Fred there on the left and Michael there next in. He's appointed to the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. Now, he's executive vice president of Union Theological, and he was, you know, was involved in social justice programs for Obama and others, and I was on the Obama transition team. But this commission is chaired by the anti-LGBT zealot Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council, who nevertheless gave a quote saying Davey would be a valuable member of the commission because he ain't going to be in the majority.
Tony's very smooth.
Fred was appointed by Schumer from the Senate.
And the Justice Department never sleeps. You hear about what they do all day long and Barr and what a disaster he is as the Attorney General. Well, they've also just shut down something called CityXGuide.com. which is a sex website, just like they shut down rentboy.com a few years ago. They do this, and they've arrested the owner, and they do this under the guise of, we're stopping sex trafficking. No, what they're doing is shutting down consensual sex, sometimes for money, that is facilitated by these communications. They're not interested in shutting down sex trafficking that's exploitative. They're only interested in shutting down consensual sex that they don't like.
Speaking of shutting down, by the way, did you see that the Stonewall Bar may have to close down, like a lot of businesses?
I talked to Stacy, the part owner there.
They started a GoFundMe campaign and everything, but, you know, the rent there is like $36,000 a month. These businesses can't survive without being open. I mean, they're allowed to serve drinks on the street or something. But
they weren't doing that a week ago when I talked to her. They had decided not to do
that. They're community-minded. They have a lot of community events there. But it's not the original bar. And, you know, the reminder for everybody is that the monument is in the streets. That's where the Stonewall Rebellion took place. It would be very sad to lose the bar. It's going to be sad to lose a lot of places, but they're trying to survive.
Well, perhaps they'll be promoted by the T-shirt that Trump supporters were wearing in Tulsa. When was that? Over the weekend? I've lost track. They're being very LGBT friendly. Andy, you want to read that slogan?
Yes, they now say that LGBT means liberty, guns, beer, and Trump, which I imagine is the slogan of Justice Brett Kavanaugh, actually.
It seems to me we should figure out an anagram for Trump. Terrible, reprehensible, you know, unacceptable, monster, whatever.
Well, there was a woman at that rally interviewed right beforehand, and she said, a young woman, she said, "I know I could be exposed to the virus, but that's my right as an American." By the way, you're going to have a community forum Thursday at 7 o'clock, Reclaiming the Dream, the Unfinished Business of Queer Liberation and the Movement for Black Lives, with Jay Walker, who was on the show last week, and others, and you. And
my old colleague from ACT UP and the Lesbian Avengers, Lola Flash.
Right, and Cypha, is that the name?
I believe so.
And moderated by Catherine Chiers. Chiers.
It's tomorrow night, Thursday night at 7 o'clock.
The link will be in the mail. Oh, we're going to have a lot of links in the mail this week for you. So we're going to go through these things quickly.
So if you're not on our email list, you want to be, because there's a lot of information there. Go to gayusatv.org and sign up for our email list. You'll only get one email a week. We are not going to bombard you. But you really want to be on our mailing list, because there are a lot of extras there. I usually hate it when people say, "There are extras on our email." But the fact is, we give you a lot of good information.
Go to gayusatv.org. Now, San Francisco is going to have a protest march on Sunday. Pride is a riot, starting at 2 o'clock from 19th Dolores. What's going on in New York and Northrop?
The Queer Liberation March for Black Lives and Against Police Brutality, taking off from Foley Square downtown, where the courts are on Center Street, at 1 p.m. We pride ourselves on promptness and not a lot of nonsense. So get down there by 12:30, quarter one, and we will take off promptly. And we have not yet published the route because we don't want any interference, but it's going to be shorter than last year. And instead of a big rally with speakers, we're going to have a gathering at the end of the march.
Wear a mask. Be distanced.
Wear masks. Stay away from each other. And for those of you who do not want to leave the house or are not in New York City, the whole thing is going to be live streamed. And we will have Pamela Snead, our old colleague from Hetrick Martin, is one of the co-hosts of the live stream, along with Amara Jones and maybe one other. And we're going to have correspondents on the street with the march. We'll interview people as they go along. We have a lot of great material we're putting into the live stream, other pre-recorded interviews and archival material that is really fabulous. So if you go to the ReclaimPrideNYC.org website, or go to Queer March on Twitter, I think, or Facebook Queer March, you can find the live stream. It's going to start between 12:45 and 1 p.m. on Sunday Eastern Time and continue for 4 hours. And you can see the march, see all the extra material there, and have a lively time watching what I think will be a very, very powerful march in the streets on Sunday.
Good. And I'm going to be there somehow on the peripheries, but everybody please wear a mask. I think everybody should wear a mask all the time when they are out of doors, period.
That's absolutely
the only way we are going to get this thing under control.
It drives me crazy to see people on the street without
masks. Half the people I see on the street in New York are not wearing masks when they're walking around, and they can say, "Well, I'm not near anybody," and blah, 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 blah. But we're not. You've got to normalize this like they have in Japan and Taiwan and other places. All right, somebody who's probably not going to be at your marches, Republican Representative Matt Gaetz of Florida. He's a particularly nasty Trump acolyte.
Everyone's welcome.
He got angry. There he is on the right there. He got angry when a black Louisiana Democrat, Cedric Richmond, expressed his concern for his black son. And Gates shot back, "Are you suggesting that none of us have non-white children?" And then he produced this kid. And he said that this guy is his son, Nestor, and 19, and is of color. And he called him the light of his life. And so people, you know, sort of raised some issues there and said, and in response to questions about whether they were lovers, he said, "That is a gay shaming smear. Are you saying being gay is something to be ashamed of? I'm not gay, but I don't think I don't think it would be if I were." Sounds like a, like what Koch used to say when he was asked about being gay.
Whatever. I don't really care. But I do care about the new Episcopal bishop in Missouri. Out gay, black Episcopal bishop, the Right Reverend Dion Kevin Johnson. Congratulations. We've told you about him before. He has finally been ordained as the bishop.
And he said, "To find ourselves in this moment, the descendant of a slave, to be called to be the Bishop of Missouri, God is good." He's an immigrant from Barbados, a graduate of General Theological Seminary right here in Chelsea, where we live, and he's married to a guy with kids.
In other hopeful semi-religious news, the Hope for Wholeness conversion therapy operation run out of Spartanburg, South Carolina, has announced that it is disbanding. They are formerly known as Truth Ministries. Conversion therapy, or as it was called in the New York Times a week or two ago, conversation therapy, is now illegal in 20 states and the District of Columbia, which I think is some kind of world record for turning the world around on a
topic. In some senses, we were all subjected to it for the last millennia. You know, many people were basically told, "You be straight." And that's what we grew up with. And a lot of people went that way. I mean, we're kind of the first generation that was able to break free. We're older, free from that, and not have to go through that. But
or escape it anyway.
Yeah.
And St. Paul, Minnesota, has just banned conversion therapy, so that's also good news.
And it's never too late to come out. Also out is Kenneth Feltz. Put a picture of him up there. Came out at 90. He said he came out because he can't forget the man he fell in love with 70 years ago. Went on to marry a woman, have kids, one of whom was a lesbian, still didn't come out. But he did come out to his daughter, and he tried to track down his ex-lover, but he couldn't find him. But he raises money for Denver Pride, and he's going to gay senior groups. He's having a great time. Congratulations, Mr. Feltz.
And if your ex is out there watching Gay USA, contact Ken. He wants to hear
His name is Philip.
Okay.
That's all I know.
Interesting study published by the Huffington Post. Religious schools are getting public money by way of vouchers, and they are pushing LGBTQ students into conversion therapy. So in all this debate about whether, you know, we need freedom of choice in schools, people should be able to send their kids to religious schools if they want, with help from the government, with vouchers. Well, this is what you're sending them into. You're sending them into conversion therapy often.
Do what you want. I object to it, but don't take my tax money to do it.
Exactly.
That is the issue before the Supreme Court in the next term, and we'll hear about it next June.
I'm very happy to see that we may be on the way to finally getting released the videotapes of the California Prop 8 trial from 2010 that the right wing has been trying to hide from us for 10 years. The judge was so unimpressed by the right wing arguments that he just expressed his utter contempt for them. It still has to maybe go through another appeal process, but things are looking good for the release of those tapes finally.
All right, down to our last 13 minutes. We want to recommend some other things to you.
A couple of quick things. A pair of gay dads, a married gay couple, have finally won U.S. citizenship for their daughter. The State Department had denied them because of all kinds of stupid stuff. But a court has finally allowed them to be recognized, both the kids, as U.S. citizens.
That's a big breakthrough. with this.
It is. And I'm sorry we don't have more time to discuss it more at length. But in Cuba, a lesbian couple married in Florida have been recognized. One of them is Cuban, have been recognized both as parents of their son. That is a great thing. And there's a similar decision. Well, we'll get to that. I recommend Welcome to Chechnya. David France, who made How to Survive a Plague, Oscar nominated for Best Documentary, has now made Welcome to Chechnya. We've been waiting for this for a long time. And it is the story about the horrendous roundup of gay people, male and female, in Chechnya, Russia, and the brutalization and killings. And this is the attempts by many gay people in Chechnya to escape both Chechnya and all of Russia. And
if you do escape, they threaten your family back home.
Yes.
I mean, it's awful. And so check that out. June 30th, it premieres on HBO. And then you're really high on this other documentary, Unsettled, which is Unsettled in America.
Unsettled is a story of lesbian and gay refugees from Syria, Angola, the Congo, a number of places in the Middle East and Africa. And it's extremely poignant, as you might expect, but it's more subtle about class differences and different access to immigration possibilities than you usually see in these documentaries. I found it very, very impressive, very nuanced, very deep in its portrayal of these people. Very, very good. It's running on the PBS World Station on Sunday night at 10 p.m. here in New York. It's running under the title of Doc World, D-O-C World, which is a PBS series. So if you're looking it up on your guide on your TV, look for Doc World, and then the documentary is called Unsettled. And it will also be streaming for a couple of weeks after that. Highly recommended.
All right, international news. Well, horrible news from Mexico. The body of a transgender doctor, Maria Elizabeth Montaño, was found dumped on the side of a motorway outside of Mexico City, 47 years old. She worked at the Mexico Social Security Institute and had been missing for 10 days. She was a big trans rights advocate in the health sector, trained other doctors in trans health care. There have been at least 117 LGBT people who were brutally murdered in Mexico last year, which is up 27% over 2018.
And in Reading, England, three gay men happened to be out in a park with a number of other people, and this guy came along who was either mentally disturbed or on drugs or both, and he just started stabbing people like crazy, and these three gay men were among the dead.
They were all friends with each other. Joe Ritchie Bennett, who was an American expat, left to right there, a scientist, David Wales, and a history teacher, James Furlong, all active with the local Reading LGBT community. The perp had previously been detained under the Mental Health Act, but too late.
And here's my favorite story of the week from Ukraine, where LGBT activists got a drone, attached a rainbow flag, and flew it up to the top of this statue, which is like the Statue of Liberty of Ukraine, except a little higher.
It's called Motherland.
They managed to attach it. The video of this flag being carried by the drone up to the statue is just priceless. Look that up online.
The company that managed the drone thing said, well, look, we're against the aggression against the LGBT community, which we consider to be from the Middle Ages.
So
it's been quite a backlash.
I would like us to be that clever. In Gabon, in Africa, the parliament lower house has passed a bill decriminalizing homosexuality, and it's a bill that the government proposed, so we will follow the progress of that bill, but congratulations to you. Tel Aviv will recognize unmarried couples as families, including same-sex couples, and since same-sex marriage is not legal in Israel yet, that's a good thing.
Well, Israel did set a record for out gay members of the Knesset, a total of six now spread across four parties. In the United Kingdom, former pro soccer player Thomas Beatty came out. He didn't think it was possible when he was an active player. He played with the Warriors in Singapore which makes him the first out player from the Asian circuit. But he, you know, he heard all the anti-gay slurs in the locker room and he retired at 29.
And a famous singer in Spain, Pablo Alborán, came out too. And he's quite prominent. So that was a big deal. Although looking at him, how could you not know? But that's just my offhand comment for the week. In Russia, a trans woman, Anastasia Vasilieva, is a printer. She was fired on the grounds that women can't be printers. Evidently, they have categories for jobs in Russia that only certain genders can hold, and she is a trans woman. So she has won a lawsuit that she had engaged in 3 years ago. Her job has been reinstated. She gets back pay. But did she win the lawsuit because the court decided against sex discrimination? Or did she win the lawsuit because they decided, oh, she's really a man, so it's okay to have her get the job back? Yeah. I don't know.
In Trinidad and Tobago, the Senate there rejected a move to let people in same-sex relationships apply for protection orders under the domestic violence law. That's not very nice.
And the Museum for Human Rights in Winnipeg, Canada, has apologized for shielding some content, obviously LGBT content, like gay marriage content, from some visitors, students from religious schools.
And in Romania, my ancestral homeland, hundreds protested at the presidential palace after a bill passed banning gender identity studies. Can't even study it.
Yeah. All right. AIDS news. LA County has started collecting sexual orientation and gender identity information about people with COVID. The state may pass a mandate for that kind of data collection, although it doesn't say anything about them collecting data around people with HIV, and I think that's a big loss. And that's what I have there. Entertainment news?
Well, Joel Schumacher has died. An out gay Hollywood director, very eclectic group of films, everything from, St. Elmo's Fire to some of the Batman movies, one of which was really good and one of which people said, well, you'd think I killed a baby. They were so upset about that one.
Well, his first film was The Incredible Shrinking Woman with Lily Tomlin.
Right. And it was not in his New York Times obituary, but he claims to have slept with 20,000 men. In his life.
He also very controversially, but I think very brilliantly, added nipples to Batman's costume. Good for you.
Okay.
I also want to remind you of a documentary that I mentioned last week, Disclosure, which is streaming on Netflix. Excellent. It's the celluloid closet of trans representation in movies and film over the years. It was made by an old colleague of ours from Manhattan Neighborhood Network, Sam Fetter. And it's getting rave reviews. It features interviews with everyone from Laverne Cox to Janet Mock to Candace Kane to Chaz Bono and a lot of other people. And it's really well done. And it also says that representation is not enough to help real people. So there's a serious message in there too, but Disclosure on Netflix.
And many of these things are going to be in our email with links and everything, including William Finn's Falsettos, which was on Broadway a couple of years ago. It's going to be online. Christian Borle and Andrew Rannells there in Falsettos. Great show by William Finn. June 25th at 8:00, just till June 27th at 8:00. And it also has Stephanie Block, who won the Tony for it. Just go to lincolncenter.org.
And available this Saturday, the 27th, on Amazon Prime, starting then, Sean Stroob gets his life story told. The longtime AIDS activist and entrepreneur and creator of Pause Magazine. And
he became the mayor of this town, and I want to watch it because I want to see how he got along with his campaign manager, who was a Trump supporter.
And in the midst of all the gun shops there in Milford, Pennsylvania, I watched it. It's quite charming. It's only a little over an hour. It's My Friend the Mayor, Small Town Democracy in the Age of Trump. And yes, a lot of Trump voters, a lot of gun shops, and really an entertaining brief 1 hour on Amazon Prime. Very good.
And you remember Olivia on The Cosby Show, the three-year-old, played by Raven Simone, now Raven Simone, Christina Pearman. She was in the 80s. She starred also in Disney's That's So Raven. Well, she married Miranda Madej, M-A-D-A.
Yeah, whatever.
Now, Raven came out back in 2013, but she tweeted after the wedding, "Let's tear this world a new a-hole. It's married now. I's married now.
Well, that may be why she's no longer on The View, that kind of language. But she was on The View for a while, very colorful. She was colorful in that picture with the rainbow hair, and she was very dressed like that all the time on The View. And she was pretty charming on The View and very out, but wasn't one of the longest-lasting co-hosts. But congratulations to her.
Right. I did a thing with our old buddy Amos White, who worked with us here on the show for a while. He's going to do something called Celebrating Pride from the Artist Forum. That's going to be on June 26th to July 3rd with a very multicultural group of filmmakers. And he's going to show their short films and things and then have a discussion with us. I'll send you the link to that.
It's so important that people watch this show with a pen and a piece of paper.
We will see. Or sign up for our email at gayusatv.org, and we'll get you going. And
then, that's the easy way to do it, yes.
And BAM has got this wild house party it's called the House Party with Every Booty. And we'll send you the link to that. It's got a lot to do with Bill T. Jones and many other artists, and we'll send you that.
All right, so the big...
And great performances is going to have Gloria a Life about Gloria Steinem. That was off-Broadway, which I highly recommend. And okay. That's going to be on Great Performances PBS on Friday, June 26th. All these links in our email.
And just a reminder, either come out to the Queer Liberation March this Sunday in New York, Foley Square, 1 p.m., or watch it online if you'd like to be comfortable and near your refrigerator. ReclaimPrideNYC.org or at Queer March for the live stream.
And happy Christopher Street Liberation Day to everyone, our 50th anniversary. It'll only be my 47th.
I'm celebrating by getting a haircut a week from Friday. You'll have to put up with this next week still, but then the mop will disappear.
Great. Keep that picture up of the thing.
Of the first mark.
Because the Library of Congress has 12 minutes of footage by Lily Vincennes of that first march. 12 minutes of footage. It is so great. We are linking, go to loc.org, Library of Congress, but we're going to put it in our email as well. It is fascinating.
It's going to be a long email this week.
Yes, it is.